From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to a special Juneteenth edition of Consider This from Boston, where, on Beacon Hill, across from the Massachusetts State House, sits one of the city's most celebrated landmarks and a symbol of the Commonwealth's emancipation history.
We are looking at the Robert Gould Shaw and 54th Massachusetts Memorial, which was completed in 1897. It was built to commemorate the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, which was the first all-black regiment recruited in the North to fight in the Civil War.
That's Carrie Greenwich, who is the Mellon Assistant Professor at the Tufts University Department of Race, Colonialism, and Diaspora. She's also the author of Black Radical, The Life and Times of William Monroe Trotter. Greenwich tells us how the Shaw Memorial, which was recently restored, was the result of protests from Boston's early black community to honor the black soldiers.
This community at the base of Beacon Hill was the heart of African American people in the city of Boston, but also the heart of African American radical abolitionists during the 19th century.
As Greenwich put it, it's a symbol of Massachusetts' role in emancipation and civil rights leading up to today. Most of the time when we think about slavery in America, images of plantations in the South come to mind. But Massachusetts did have enslaved people, often who were skilled workers like blacksmiths or carpenters. And Greenwich says they were treated just as inhumanely. But in 1783, there was a shift.
You have this rhetoric of republicanism, little r, which is the idea that everyone needs to be able to govern themselves. You have a strong cohort of Republican little r statesmen, statespeople in Massachusetts, such as the Adamses, who are arguing and really struggling with, well, what does it mean to have liberty if you have slavery? Also, by that point, the economy was not relying completely on slave labor. It was relying on slave trading and on trading from other goods that were produced by enslaved people elsewhere, as opposed to in the state of Massachusetts. And so there was the economic argument, right? Is this an economic system that is actually going to be viable in 20 years? And most people in Massachusetts would have said no. There's also the notion that by the 1780s, you had slavery existed, say, in Boston, but enslaved people were a minority of the black population. So you had these gradations of freedom within Boston. You had some black people who were technically, for all intents and purposes, free legally, even though they were bound working for a white person. And so the arguments against slavery were that economically it's not viable. B, it's a system that goes against sort of this Republican little r way of being. And C, there were all these comments and ideas that, you know, eventually the black community is going to die out. If we get rid of slavery now, you know, Massachusetts will be a white state. That was kind of sort of a very true sort of idea of looking at it, right?
So an ulterior motive.
Yeah, not necessarily a benevolent thing,
yeah.
Right? One of the things we know, though, is that by the 1780s, 1790s, the black community didn't dissolve. It actually increased. And so that's when you start to have a real push by black people themselves to make freedom actually a reality within the state. So doing things like fighting for schools, doing things like fighting for their right to churches and to have their own church when they're excluded and treated poorly by white churches. Push to strengthen laws that descendants of Black Revolutionary War soldiers receive a pension, for instance, which was, you know, controversial at the time. And so it was really, you know, Massachusetts ends up getting rid of enslavement, but it's definitely something that ends over time, right? And just because slavery ended did not mean that every white person in Massachusetts believed that slavery should end. And in fact, we know there's a lot of evidence that some white people who owned enslaved people actually sold all their enslaved people to the South, right?
Really?
So that they could preserve the money that they had.
Wow.
And remain in Boston, so that they're still living in Massachusetts. And they can technically say, I don't own slaves, but they sold all their slaves to, say, to somebody in Barbados or somebody in Virginia or somebody in North Carolina, and they got a profit and they were still making money off of that, right? So it's something to think of in terms of slavery legally not existing, but what did freedom actually look like if you're still living in a society that functions off of enslavement. But Massachusetts was seen as, particularly by black people, as a place where slavery did not exist, and that particularly by the 1780s, 1790s, you have a very strong black community. You have the Prince Hall Masons that are founded here in 1787. You have the African Church that's founded here in the 1790s, right? So it was seriously seen as a place there. If you were a black person fleeing enslavement, And during the Revolution, Massachusetts was the one place where you could have some protections underneath the law. So it's a very strong, very vibrant, very militant community that's here in Boston at the time. And so when we think of Juneteenth, you know, we have to kind of think of the fact that you have Juneteenth in Texas, but you have all of these versions of kind of emancipation that take place in Black communities before that happens. and that one of them, of course, is in New England.
Yeah.
The other thing is that most Black people in New England celebrated their own Emancipation Day, which was West Indian Emancipation Day in 1833. And that was because a majority of Black people in Massachusetts had a lot of ties to the Caribbean and to the Atlantic trade that went into the West Indies. And so slavery ending in the West Indies was actually a source of celebration for that community, for this community, well into the 19th and early 20th century.
Fascinating. And how much of what Massachusetts was doing by saying, you know, slavery is incompatible with our laws here, when they were saying that in the late 1700s, how much of that was impacting what was going on in the South and eventually the push to end slavery in the South?
So Massachusetts's reputation in the South, particularly by the 1840s and 1850s, was that it was a hotbed of abolition. And the irony of that is that abolition and anti-slavery were still a minority opinion in Massachusetts amongst white Massachusetts residents. It was really a core group of African-American people and then a handful of white allies who were interested in anti-slavery and abolition.
I grew up in the South, and so many people are like, not aware of the Black roots in Boston. They're what, girl?
Exactly.
Like, are you okay up there?
Exactly.
You know, and so it's interesting to hear about this, but also to look across the street from where we are now and see the State House, and then, of course, look out across the Common and know that this is the site of so much protest even today.
Yes.
And as I understand it, was also the site of protest back then.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, and I go through this in my book, Black Radical, is that, you know, you have this community, very small Black community, but really had and has been at the forefront of kind of this protest tradition. So you have the 54th Regiment Memorial that's installed in 1897, which was directly the result of Black people protesting to get that installed. By the early 20th century, you have protests that take place right here on Boston Common on behalf of strengthening of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. William Monroe Trotter is the editor of the Boston Guardian at the time. 1915, you have some of the largest and most sustained protests against the racist film Birth of a Nation that take place right here behind this. You have Black people campaigning on behalf of a federal anti-lynching bill right here across from the State House from roughly 1912 up until 1922. So really you have this sustained group of Black, radically minded people who really believed not just that civil rights was enshrined in the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, but also that fight was something that had to be led by Black people themselves and that Black people had to decide the terms under which they were liberated, which was sort of a very radical statement both then as now.
I know from my own experience that Boston and Massachusetts' slave legacy is different from the South, but that doesn't mean it's not present. Everywhere in America, places that stand for liberty and freedom still have their own struggles with racial justice. So today, as the nation and the Commonwealth celebrate Juneteenth and gain a better understanding of its meaning, let's remember the people who made involuntary sacrifices to get to where we are today, and that we still have a ways to go. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since knowing your history and the people behind it, I'm Paris Alston. Be well.